WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Hello, everybody. This is WVUA 90.7 FM, the Capstone, and welcome to episode 72 of the Full Court Press Podcast. My name is Jamie Martinez, and I'm joined by Nick Atkinson and Caden Johnson. To stay up to date, make sure to follow us on IG at FCP_UA. With that being said, let's get into it. We got a fun one for y'all this week. We have a little segment we've never done before in the history of this program, and we got that later, so stay tuned. But first of all, let's get to the news. You know it. We're going to start out with something that came out a little, maybe over an hour ago, and that is Jay Crowder is working out with the Sacramento Kings later this week. And we'll see if he lands a roster spot in Sacramento. I think it could be an interesting signing. He's been kind of bouncing around teams ever since that 2020 season. And I don't know, maybe he'll find a home in Sacramento. I doubt it. He seems like he's never happy with any situation he's
in. Not good anymore either.
Yeah, and he's just not the same player he was. So Jay Crowder with the Kings, so be it. And now we go to Caden Johnson with the rest of the news.
All right, so I've got some news to report over the last week or so. As of today, Christian Wood underwent surgery on his left knee. The Lakers say he'll be reevaluated in 8 weeks. It was first reported by Shams, just like all the news I have today, actually. Mm-hmm. Other than that, a few days ago, Markieff Morris re-signed with the Mavs. I don't think the deal is disclosed on how much yet, but I just know they want to keep that veteran presence in the locker room that they had last season. Talen Horton Tucker signed with the Chicago Bulls. This kind of went under the radar a little bit. He is a guy that averaged 10.7 points per game last year, so another decent young piece to go in Chicago. He's actually from Chicago as well. You guys have any insight on that?
No, not really. I mean, I don't think he's that good. I mean, but I mean, it's whatever. He's young. Yeah. Whatever.
I think it's crazy how the LA media can kind of blow anybody out of proportion, because I remember THT was getting a lot of big talk from LA. He goes to Utah, doesn't really do anything. So, I mean, maybe a fresh start in his hometown could be cool for him, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, having, like, somewhat potential on the Lakers as a young player, mm-hmm. like, sets you up for your whole career. Because it's like Max Christie. Max Christie's on, like, a four-year deal.
Kyle Kuzma was getting Kobe comparisons.
Yeah.
Better than Tatum.
Yeah, better than Tatum.
Yeah.
All right, and then the big news of the week, Jamal Murray and the Nuggets agreed on a four-year, $209 million maximum contract extension. Jamal Murray is now under contract for $245 million through 2029. So they have him bagged up for a while. Seems like he's probably going to play out his days, mm-hmm. especially his prime in Denver.
It's pretty crazy. I mean,
overpay?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a lot of money for somebody who's never been an all-star.
$52 million a year.
Yeah. For never being an all-star, yeah, he's got the ring and he performed well in that playoff series. But for never being an all-star, I don't know if that's the type of money I want to be handing out to a not aging yet, but soon to be aging at that point, guard. So, I don't know. It's interesting for the Nuggets. Keeping their homeboy around, though.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, it's an overpay, but I know there's inflation in the NBA compared to, like, 10 years ago, but, you know, a guy like the two MVP candidates in 2017, Westbrook and Harden, they got a $205 million extension on both of their contracts that year, and now Jamal Murray's making $50 million more than them, so I think that's, like, a little insane.
It's pretty wild, yeah.
One thing to know, I think it's easier to pay guys like that or to, like, take a big payment like that whenever they've already brought home a chip to you. Like, I think it's I don't think Jamal Murray even gets $40 million a year if they hadn't won a ring yet. Yeah. You know, they're not really – they're still in pursuit of other rings, but they're not really as desperate for that ring.
As they were.
As they were. Yeah. So I think it makes it easier to maybe, like, overpay your guys a little bit that, you know, that brought you home a chip.
Yeah.
For sure. And that's all the news we have for y'all this week. So, quick news. Let's move on to our brand new segment, Hot Takes, Defend and Destroy. Oh, yeah, that's a really cool name I came up with 30 minutes ago.
I like that a lot.
Defend and Destroy. Okay, so here's the rundown. Each of us have brought, I believe it was 5 hot takes to the episode. And for every hot take, we will choose one person to defend the take and one person to destroy the take. FYI, just because we bring this take does not mean we necessarily agree with the take, because I have a couple here that I just want to hear my guys defend and destroy them. I want to have some fun today. So I think we can get it started. Hopefully that kind of all makes sense. So I guess we can start with Nick with his first take. He's going to pick one of me or Caden to defend it, or destroy it.
Okay. For my first one, I'll come in heavy on this one. Why is Curry better than Kobe all time? Okay. I want Caden to destroy it, and I want you to defend it.
Okay.
Jamie.
So who's going to start?
Neither one of y'all two have figured out. I don't know.
Oh, man. This is tough because I feel like I need to do research to kind of...
Okay. It's just whatever comes to your mind about why Curry is better than Kobe all time or why he's not better.
Okay, let me pull up the basketball reference real quick. But I guess I'll start. Two really homegrown type players, guys that stuck around through the thick and thin with their franchise. But Stephen Curry is a certified winner. He's got that MVP, the extra MVP over Kobe Bryant. He was the first ever unanimous MVP in the history of basketball. And despite those super team allegations with Kevin Durant, I don't really think you could say Stephen Curry was really in anybody's shadow at any point in his career. Unlike Kobe, where the argument could be made with him being in Shaquille O'Neal's shadow. Stephen Curry, only one finals MVP, but boy, oh boy, was he great in every single one of them. Two MVPs, 10-time All-Star, two scoring titles, and if he wouldn't have been hurt all those younger years ago, he would be much higher in the all-time scoring list. I think he's the greatest point guard of all time, really an all-time Olympic performance this year as well, so I think it would be safe to say Stephen Curry's over Kobe Bryant all time.
Not that Curry doesn't have longevity at all, mm-hmm. but he doesn't have the longevity that I think Kobe Bryant brought to the table. Kobe was an all-star in his second season, and then in his all of his last, I think it was 17 or 16 seasons. Mm-hmm. So I think Kobe Bryant, like, really, really just kind of was the guy for his entire career. And I know that they had Shaq during those early 2000s runs, and that Shaq was their main guy. But as soon as he left, Kobe was the face of the Lakers for 15 years. And in that time span, he averaged 20 points per game from 1999 all the way to 2013. The next year, he averaged 13. And then the year after that, he was back up to 22 again. So, and that was like as, you know, in his 19th, 18th season, something like that. So I think Kobe is better than Curry all time because I think he brings a little bit more to the game, too, as well. From a basketball standpoint, you've got, like, defensively, I think Kobe's better on the ball, off the ball even defensively than Curry is. Obviously, Curry has the shooting on him, but Kobe mm-hmm. has the slashing ability. He's got the mid-range ability, in my opinion, as well. Kobe was kind of like – Kobe's footwork in the paint was so good, too, that he almost looked like a shorter Hakeem Olajuwon out there at sometimes. Yeah. I think his ability to fade away and shoot over bigger defenders to the point that they couldn't block it in the post – was really impressive as well, and he could create shots at a level at a he could create shots at all three levels at a level that, you know, we haven't really seen from anybody else in the game.
That's true. I do want to bring up one more thing. I think Kobe Bryant worked his career to be the second Michael Jordan. Stephen Curry was the first Stephen Curry, and I think he revolutionized the game in a bigger manner than Kobe Bryant did, in a way that three-point shooting after him has taken, you know, has had such a sharp rise in, you know, how many times people are doing him a game. Stephen Curry was the first of his kind with that shooting ability and how often he shot it. The three-pointer was more popular than it ever was after him. So.
That's a great point about the shooting, but my argument is that Kobe brought the game to an international stage like no one else did before him. Mike kind of made basketball famous in itself, mm-hmm. especially in the United States. But I think Kobe, all the work he did over in Europe, I think that kind of brought in a completely different crowd. I don't think we'd even see some of these European players today if it wasn't for Kobe Bryant.
Real talk.
So do I pick who I...
Yeah, you can pick.
What do you want to, you know?
I don't know.
Who gave a better argument? Yeah. It doesn't have to be who you agree with.
Okay, all right. I think Cade made a better argument, I do think Curry's better all time. So, I think Caden's points were a little bit better.
Yeah. Okay. So, Caden or me, who should go?
Will we just go in them?
Yeah.
All right. So, I'll go next. I kind of really focused on this season, and I kind of regret that because
I did too.
I would have liked to have done all-time takes. But my take is the Memphis Grizzlies will finish as a top two seed in the Western Conference this season and reach the Western Conference Finals. So, Caden, I want you to defend that.
Let's go.
And let's go. Nick, God, I want God. You to destroy
go.
That.
Thank let's God. Go.
So whoever wants to start.
Boss man can start.
All right. I love the Grizzlies. Mm-hmm. As much, I'm going to defend this take with my life, but I don't know if they'll be that good. I do think they are going to be really good from my personal opinion, but as far as being the two seed, it's the ball's definitely in their court. We saw last year three teams in the West had the same record, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, OKC gets the tiebreaker. But there could be a very similar situation like that again in the West because of the depth as far as teams go. You know, don't be surprised if, other than the Thunder, there's a clunk of teams stuck between, you know, 48 to say, 53 wins. I think that's what we're going to see, actually. I think seeds 2 through... you know, maybe 4 or 5 will do that. Memphis wins big games. They have the intensity, the hustle, the defense to win those big games. I trust them in a primetime slot, say late in the regular season, to beat teams like the Mavericks, to beat teams like the Nuggets, even if they play good enough. They have depth. They've got Jaren Jackson Jr. down low. They've got Ja Morant coming back. If he can stay healthy, who knows what he's capable of. He's an all-NBA level player, I think, when he's healthy. And, I mean, I'll let Nick talk just because I'm yapping, but I can keep going about this Grizzlies team.
Okay, yeah. for me the biggest like hole in their team is the fact that they don't have a big man besides Zach Edey on the team. You can count Jaren as a big man, but like he's an elite, you know, what's it called, an elite paint
rim protector.
Yeah, but every season that they have been good, it's because they had another center down low. They had Steven Adams, and they got to the second round of the playoffs because, you know, Jaren gets to roam out of the paint, and he gets to, you know, be Jaren Jackson. But with now having Zach Edey, I think bringing in a rookie, it's not going to – he's not going to be able to, like, perform up to par compared to, like, Steven Adams or Valanciunas or any of the other big men that they had previously. And I also think that with G.G. Jackson potentially supposed to miss, I think, 2 or 3 months at the beginning of the season, I think that's a huge hit for them because other than that, then you look again, they don't have much other big man depth aside from Brandon Clark, who's coming back from an injury that put him out all season last year. And then really they're just banking on guys like Luke Kennard, Derrick Rose, who we know can't stay healthy, Marcus Smart, and Vince Williams to be standout. And I'd say aside from Marcus Smart, none of them have been able to do that in their career so far. So, I mean, Vince Williams, he came from being nothing to something last year. But I think that they're going to be really dependent on their young players to provide, and I just don't know if they're ready to do that yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the big three of Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, and JJJ is really complemented well by their young players. I think the Grizzlies will benefit a lot from the experimental kind of style of play they had last year when they had some of their stars injured. And I think that's going to carry them a lot this season because you've got guys like Vince Williams, like Jake LaRavia even, like Santi Aldama, like guys that aren't your big-name guys but are used to stepping up in big moments that go under the radar because of, you know, their problems with depth last year and injuries. So I think when it comes down to it, these role players are going to get called up and they're going to deliver when asked upon. And then on top of that, to think about all those role players that had small breakout moments throughout the season, they're just bringing back Ja Morant, JJJ, fully healthy Desmond Bane, Marcus Smart. And then on top of that, I think Zach Edey and JJJ, if they go start together, which it would be a little clunky down low, but it would also be the best defensive front court in the NBA, I think.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that last point that you made. They'll definitely be like top three minimum. But yeah, I just think another point with that is, like, compared to other teams in the Western Conference, I know that we probably shouldn't go off of just other teams, but I think that, like you were kind of saying, I think that they could win games in the regular season against this team and that team. But, you know, I just think that Dallas, maybe not even Dallas. I mean, I think they could be better than Dallas. I think they could be a lot better than Dallas. I think Minnesota, OKC, Denver, those three specifically, I don't think they'll be better than. Just because with those three, they all have, like, I'd say two guys that can, you know, go for 50 any game, and they could, you know, shut down an entire defense and, you know, make the whole defensive, you know, the whole defensive game plan collapse for each team that they play. Like, you know, the Denver Nuggets, they have Murray and they have Jokic, and then the Thunder have Jalen Williams and Shea and Chet, and then, you know, Minnesota has Kat and Anthony Edwards. So I just see, has Desmond Bane really been like a, I don't think he's been that kind of a score in his career yet.
Yeah,
to where
yeah,
he can
yes.
just go for
yes.
like,
yeah,
exactly.
yeah.
like.
I mean, no, not like that, but no. The Grizzlies have 7 players that can go for 25 on any given night.
You think?
Yeah. Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr., Ja Morant.
Marcus Smart.
Vince Williams, Marcus Smart.
2023, Bane.
Vince Williams
30,
did it last
year. 30?
25.
Oh, 25.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh,
they have scoring
yeah,
options.
Yeah,
like,
averaged.
If you game plan for Ja, Desmond Bane and Marcus Smart are going to attack the wings. Luke Kennard's going to be open for 30.
Yeah. Desmond Bane averaged 23.7 points per game last year. So.
Yeah.
I just think that, like, all those other teams I mentioned, though, they have better role players. Comparably, like specifically OKC and Minnesota, those two teams.
I believe
that
OKC
Boston,
and Minnesota do, but I don't think Denver does.
Yeah, they don't. They don't. But you know, they have the best player in the NBA. That's the only thing that really, you know, puts them.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously.
Up
yeah.
there, really.
Dang, I really got y'all talking on that one. That's a good. That was that went really well. I appreciate.
I think
it's
me
guys.
And him both really. I really don't think they're going to be like that good, and he does think
yeah,
they're going to be really good.
I think,
so.
I'm
I think because of personal bias, I would lean towards Caden, but Nick did really make some good points. That I didn't think of, so y'all both did a really good job, but because of bias, I'm going to lean towards Caden. So, because
of bias?
Yeah.
What is this, Jamie?
No, because that's I also believe the Grizzlies will be a top 2 seed, but it's kind of like how Nick said.
Yeah.
So, all right, moving on.
All righty. Okay, first one. The Suns will make another finals appearance with Devin Booker at the helm. Not this season,
okay.
but just in general. Nick, you will be destroying this. Jamie, you will be defending
it. Oh, man. Okay.
I'm destroying it.
Not win, but reach another NBA Finals
okay.
with a Devin Booker-led team.
Okay. So we've already seen Devin Booker do this before with a very elderly Chris Paul, who was essentially on a walking cane. And Booker dominated in that season. And he's only gotten better as his career's gone on. Last year with Kevin Durant on his team, we kind of thought he would take a scoring dip, and he still went out and averaged 27 a game. So who's to say with Kevin Durant this year and an improved Grayson Allen and everybody else that they brought in that they can't reach that point again as early as maybe this season? Because, yes, we're seeing teams like Oklahoma City who are on the rise, but they're young, they're inexperienced. All these other things are going to factor into that. Memphis, like we had legitimately just talked about, have been dealing with injuries constantly, no matter what. And Dallas was the kind of surprise team last year. Nobody really expected them to be that 5 seed and jump all the way to the NBA Finals, and they did just that. Phoenix finished the 6th right behind them, so who's to say they can't be that team this year?
Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, Anthony Edwards has been great, but, I mean, he lost to that same Dallas team. So Kevin Durant has been an all-time scorer. We know this, debatably the greatest scorer of all time. And as we've seen in this Olympics this past summer, he still has that juice. Devin Booker has been phenomenal shooting the ball, facilitating. And now they add Bradley Beal, who, assuming he stays healthy, alongside guys like Grayson Allen and all these other dudes, I don't see why they can't reach that point once again in the Western Conference, because it may be loaded, but anybody can be upset at any time. We saw that with Denver. We saw that with a bunch of other guys. So I don't think it's that crazy to say that Phoenix reaches the hilltop once again.
Okay, so for me, I think one of the biggest things about that season specifically, yeah, for sure. The biggest thing for that season as to why the Suns were successful was because they played many, many, many injury-led teams. The Lakers, first team that they played, they had no LeBron, they had no Anthony Davis. Well, they've had LeBron for like 2 games, but, I mean, you know, if you don't have LeBron for 7 games and he's fully healthy, you're going to lose the series. And, you know, that was whenever DeAndre Ayton was probably considered a top 10 center in the NBA. And
oh,
there's
it was more like top 5.
Yeah, there was no rim protector against him. You have, you know, 35-year-old Dwight Howard. He's not going to be able to guard DeAndre Ayton. And so then they go on to play the Denver Nuggets in the second round. No Jamal Murray, no Michael Porter Jr., no Aaron Gordon yet. It was, once again, just nobody to play any sort of defense on them whatsoever. Then they go and play the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard, and it's just Paul George. And Paul George takes them to Game 7 by himself, and or Game 6, one of the two. And then they go in the finals, and they win 2 games at first because they have momentum going into it from Chris Paul and everything like that. Despite what Jamie said, he was old, but Chris Paul was arguably better than Devin Booker during the run. And then the next 4 games, Devin Booker kind of just turned into like a Tim Hardaway Jr. Just, you know, can't really get anything going, you know, and they got destroyed defensively. And I think a player like Devin Booker, who has been able to like transcend his playing style over the last couple of years into a better playmaker, better defender, better scorer, I do think that there's like a way he could get to a title, but I just think with the way it's currently constructed now, he's 28 years old. And if they don't get anything going this year, then that pushes them back another 5 years because Bradley Beal's 32, Kevin Durant's 36. If they don't win this year, Kevin Durant's going to want out. And so then Kevin Durant's also not going to get the same pull in terms of picks as he did before because of his age and because we've seen that in the last 5 years he cannot win. Well, he hasn't been able to get back to where he was with Golden State. So I think that the fact that they won't have any draft picks or any long-term contracts of role players is what will set them back from being able to get to the finals again or a deep playoff run again.
Yeah, that's a good point. But another thing that I forgot is they made a couple of very solid signings in the offseason. They added Plum Dog Millionaire, Mason Plumlee, who is, a very solid backup center. But they add Tyus Jones, who I think is one of the more underrated playmakers in the league, averaging 12-7. And in a recent game, in the third-to-last game of the season, he went out and had a 16-assist game, which is something that Phoenix didn't really have at all last season when you're running either Bradley Beal or Devin Booker at the point guard, neither of which have been known as that kind of playmaker that Tyus Jones is. So I think with Tyus on the offense now, he's going to create shots for Booker and Beal and Kevin Durant, and now you're going to have to worry so much more about those guys because there wasn't really a legitimate playmaker for them. So I think Jones was a big, very solid signing, and hopefully he stays there. And they have, solid enough depth with, Bol Bol. And Royce O'Neal, but I think Tyus Jones is a more substantial signing than a lot of people are making it out to be.
Well, here's the thing about Tyus Jones. He signed for a minimum contract, and it does not have bird rights, so he cannot come back next year if he plays good. So unless they give him $5 million, and I think he's a $20 million player. I think he's one of the better pure point guards in the NBA. But that just brings my point up again that they don't have the money to financially build a competent roster. And whenever Kevin Durant is ready to go, they're still not going to have money. So,
all right, if you two are done.
I'm done.
Yeah. Not that I disagree with this take entirely, because I think Devin Booker is good enough to lead a team to the finals again. I think Nick made some good points about how this really isn't or doesn't feel like the Suns' year. And then on top of that, they have some mediocre bad contracts that they're going to have to deal with in the future. So odds-wise, it just doesn't look that likely. Not that I'm not saying that I don't think they will, but I do think Nick made good points about that.
Back to me?
Yep.
All right. Why is Anthony Davis a top 50 player of all time? I want Kane to defend it, and I want Jamie to destroy that.
Okay. He said top 50?
50.
Okay.
He made the NBA 75 list, but mm-hmm. I feel like he kind of has a legit argument to do that, so I made 50 instead.
Yeah.
Well, I'll go ahead and start. I think Anthony Davis is one of the best big man defenders to ever play the game of basketball, really. And that goes as far as not just rim protection, but defending in general. Anthony Davis can almost guard 1 through 5 unless it's a really quick one because of how quick he is and how athletic he is. And that's just what he brings to the game defensively. I think he's really good in the passing lanes. Obviously, he's a great rim protector, but he's not like a Rudy Gobert. You can't five wide and you can't go five out on Anthony Davis and expect to swing it around and just cook him in a one-on-one isolation game. He's too good for that. And I think that element of his game is something that we don't really see in historical great big men of the past, which could give him an edge over them if you want to really compare. And that's just what he brings defensively, like I was saying. Offensively, he's a career 24 points per game scorer on pretty solid shooting. And he's even added a three-point shot to his game over the course of his career, which I think is insanely impressive. He's one of the first big men to just say, you know what, I'm going to adapt to the times instead of just trying to force the way that I play. It just kind of felt like one summer he decided, hey, I'm going to learn how to shoot threes. And then he added it to his arsenal, and he's a solid three-point shooter. In the Lakers' title run, he was a great three-point shooter. I think he hit a three-point buzzer beater in one of the games against Miami. He's proven that he can shoot threes in big moments. And to have someone that brings the defensive anchorage like he does, but also is able to play offense at a high level, not just in the pick and roll and lob game, but with expanding his range and shooting, I think he brings more to the table skill-wise than a lot of people that you would think from the past
would be over him as far as all-time list goes.
Yeah, you definitely brought up some valid points. And you kind of opened up with how good of an interior defender he was. And I think to be in that top 50, at least for a big man like AD, you have to be one of the all-time legitimate best rim protectors of all time. He's a three-time block champ, so don't take that away from him. Five times all defensive, but no defensive player of the years. And I don't think he was the rim protector on the level of a Bill Russell or a Tim Duncan, a Kevin Garnett, Hakeem Olajuwon, Shaquille O'Neal. All those top 50-esque guys, I don't think Anthony Davis hits that level. And you brought up his three-point percentage. He was great at one point in his a solid point in his career. Those last 2 years in New Orleans, he was shooting phenomenally from three-point range, but it's only deteriorated from there. In 2021, only shooting 18% from three, and then 25 and 27, which aren't terrible for what he's done, but it's only deteriorated from the 33, the 34. And he has LeBron James for that finals run. I know everybody likes to bring up the Mickey Mouse ring, yada, 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 you know, all the things about that. But I wouldn't take that away from him. I just don't believe Anthony Davis is in that top 50 because I don't think he's there with the level of talent that is in that top 50. So, and injuries has also plagued a lot of his career. So I think that takes away from a little bit of what he has to offer as well.
Yeah.
Y'all done?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Jamie, I think I agree with you because I like what you said about the level of talent because, like, when you look at guys that are in the top 50, like, I just don't think that he's on that level as a player individually because, like, what he's accomplished individually, he could never get out of the first round as a first option. So.
Yeah, yeah, I try to take the approach of more, like, skill and talent because you're right. Like, mm-hmm. He doesn't have, like, the
success,
the accolades,
yeah.
necessarily. I do think he was still a major part on that 2020 championship.
Oh, for he sure. was probably better than LeBron.
But yeah. Jamie brought up a good point, too, with the injuries. I can't argue against the injuries,
yeah.
obviously. I don't believe he's a top 50 player of all time.
Yeah, you just got to defend
but,
him.
But I do think he's a really great player.
Yeah, for sure. Let's move on to mine. Mine is the Los Angeles Clippers finishes a bottom three team in the Western Conference, and they're in contention for the first pick.
I love that.
So I'll have Nick defend that and Caden destroy that.
I really like that. Okay, so I'll start. I think that they're going to be I absolutely 100% think they will be the 12 seed or less. They do not have the talent, aside from Kawhi Leonard, on the team that could be a win-now team. James Harden is not the player he used to be. He averaged 16 and 8 last season, and that's not what you pay a guy $50 million to do. He's taken up a bunch of salary cap to play no defense and to turn the ball over three or four times a game. They also don't have shooting anymore because they've lost Paul George, and they replaced him with Nick Batum and Chris Dunn, Derrick Jones Jr. They don't have any shooting on the team. So Harden's going to be doing all of the moves that he does, and he will not be able to get into the paint and create any shots. It's going to lead to a lot of turnovers and a lot of iso movement by Kawhi Leonard, who is going to end up getting hurt because there is no spacing on the wings, and Zubac just cannot do anything aside from in the 10-foot area. And then on top of that, their depth looks good, quote-unquote good, but it's all players that are unproven. Chris Dunn, he came back last season. Mo Bamba, he has been a player that has gotten paid big money over the last 2 years by Philly to do absolutely nothing and to really be injured more than Joel's injured. And, you know, Paul Reed was better in terms of being a backup than him. Then you've got, who else did they get?
DJJ.
That's a very good signing by them. Derrick Jones Jr. was a very good signing. But I, once again, he can't shoot for nothing. Not for nothing, but he's not, I mean, for what you want besides a player like James Harden, he's not going to be sufficient enough for that whenever you've got a lineup of Harden, Terrence Mann, Derrick Jones Jr., Kawhi and Zubac. That's probably the worst shooting team in the NBA right now.
Yeah.
Because nobody can shoot at an elite level besides James Harden, who his shooting has dipped ever since he left Houston. So.
I just disagree with the shooting part. I think Norman Powell, KPJ,
oh, I forgot about Norman Powell.
Bones, James Harden, Amir Coffey, Batum, like they have shooters. Kawhi, obviously Terrence Mann. They have shooters. I think they have great veteran presences as well. Obviously, Kawhi and James Harden are two all-time greats. If Kawhi is healthy, which is what I'm going to base my argument off of, if Kawhi's healthy, if Kawhi can give them 65 to 70 games this season, there's just no way that they're a bottom three seed. If he's healthy. if Kawhi Leonard is healthy, he's still, as a 33-year-old, good enough to carry a team to play to the playoffs, in my opinion. I think he can do that with James Harden, and I do think they have good depth, especially at the wings. They're just loaded on wings. I mean, Amir Coffey, Norman Powell, Terrence Mann, like I was saying, and then you got DJJ that's going to come in and probably play the four. Maybe even a little bit of small ball five because they don't have a lot of depth at big. But they did re-sign Ivaka Zubac. I think he's going to be their franchise center for a while. And I do think that there's just teams that they're better than in the West. That's what it really boils down to. I think even like a team that might be as good as like the Spurs, if the Clippers are as healthy, if the Clippers are healthy and they want to win, like they're not resting guys, they're not intentionally tanking, then they'll be better than teams like the Spurs or like the maybe could be better than the Warriors.
Portland.
Potentially. Yeah, obviously better than
Portland.
Utah. And could maybe see them being better than the Rockets too. And granted, this is if they stay healthy
if
they play with the mindset of wanting to win and not tanking, because mm-hmm. I do think that's a possibility
too. Yeah. Having, like, I think that what you made some good points about they have, like, good wing depth. But, like, aside from that, I kind of bring up the point again of them having a lot of players that are unproven. Like KPJ, you know, he's – every year he has something come up. And, you know, he's great at basketball, but he just always has some sort of off-court issue. And then Bones Highland, he is maybe one of the worst basketball players I've ever watched in my life.
But I don't think those are guys that are going to get a lot of minutes. I just don't think they will.
Well, I mean, they got to have a backup point guard. Chris Dunn. Yeah, I mean, I don't – and then Chris Dunn again, I mean, he's a great defender, but he's unproven, like, again, you know, I mean – we haven't seen him do much of nothing on a winning team.
I think they'll go Bones for backup point guard.
Yeah, I mean.
And I do agree with what you're saying. Like, Bones is a terrible defender, but he's been young. He's got room to improve. He's only
21, 22, 23. Yeah.
So I don't know. I think Bones will take the backup role just because Chris Dunn's was kind of like a long shot signing, anyways. But I don't think, like, KPJ, I don't think Chris Dunn, or, you know. I think one of KPJ, Chris Dunn, and Bones will get minutes. It's going to be whoever's the best out of them. So that would only essentially really throw you one unproven player into it. But like I was saying, I think the depth they have at wing will kind of take over the lack of depth they have
everywhere else
as far as for point guards and centers.
And I like what you said about the small ball thing with Derrick Jones Jr. They're going to run a lot of small ball.
Exactly, because they don't have
bigs. That, and last year, they tried to run Harden, Terrence Mann, Paul George, Kawhi, and
P.J. Tucker.
And P.J. Tucker, yeah. And that, they have P.J. Tucker, and he's going to play a lot.
So. I think DJJ will take some of those P.J. Tucker minutes. That's what I was thinking. I think DJJ will fit into that, like, closing lineup. Five spot if small ball has been working for them throughout the game.
It just was. I mean, it didn't work last year. I'm trying to put a good way to put it. It's like it was a horrible thing to watch. Was watching them try to run a small ball five man without Westbrook being on the court as the best rebounder on the team. I think, you know, I'm trying to not involve him too much into this, but I just think that they lost a lot, and I don't think that they're going to be that good.
Okay, that was great. I think I'm going to have to lean towards Nick on this one. That's why I included the bottom three, because I think no matter what, they'll be better than either Portland and Utah. But I think with Memphis and Houston missing the playoffs last year, they'll obviously – I think they will both make the play-in. I think that kind of drops the Clippers down. So health is wealth, and the Clippers have always had a problem with that. Both of you guys brought up awesome points, but I think I'm going to lean towards Nick on that one.
All right, I've got – Giannis wins both an MVP and a finals again in his career. And it doesn't have to be with the Bucks.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Nick, you're going to destroy this, and okay. Jamie, you're going to defend it.
Okay. You're defending, so you go first.
That's okay. So you said another MVP and a finals?
And a finals.
Okay, so I think the MVP is not far from reality whatsoever. I think within the last – okay, his last MVP – was
2021.
And I think the most recent Jokic MVP Let's see. He was third in MVP voting in both 21, 22, and then fourth in 2023. I think in reality, voter fatigue had a heavy take in that, and I think he could have been the MVP in every single one of those years. I don't see why he couldn't do that again this year because he's only been improving. Last year averaged 30 points a game. Contention for Defensive Player of the Year. His three-point shot's only getting better, and his free throws, he's only getting better. His blocks are only getting higher. His steals are only getting better, and I think he compliments Damian Lillard well whenever, you know, Dame feels like he wants to play. So I think an MVP is obviously not out of the reality for Giannis because he is that dominant, and he's only getting better. He has the defensive stats. He has it all. I think voters fatigue aside, Giannis for sure can win an MVP. But with the current state of the Bucks, I'm not sure if he can win that finals. But it's not crazy to say that he leaves and wins that extra championship because with the way he plays, he's going to be dominant for so long and be able to, you know, be on contending teams for so long. Especially if he wins that MVP, that would assume that he is a top three, top two seed in whatever conference he's in. I think with that situation that he would be in, he is for sure a lock for another championship because he has all that talent in the world. We've seen how hard he can carry a team, especially in that finals against Phoenix. He was ridiculous. He's still young. It's not like he's an old man. What's he, 29?
30.
Yeah, 30 years old.
Maybe
that
31.
Is, yeah, he's still young in basketball terms. Giannis still has that juice, and I for sure can see him winning another MVP and a title, whether he goes to, I don't even know, Golden State, whatever
Chicago.
He wants to do. Chicago. Chicago's young. We'll see with that. But, yeah, I don't think a championship is far from crazy to say.
Okay, for me, so we've only seen, I think, two guys win an MVP in the 30s, Steve Nash and Michael Jordan. And I don't think Giannis will be the guy to break that with the level of with how he's, you bring up those points about how he's consistently gotten better, but he's continued to miss more games as the years go on. Last year, he played like, I don't know, 60 games, which for him is
in
not a lot.
2023 to 24?
Past season, yeah.
2022, he played 63, and then this year he played 73. So he actually played 10 more games.
Well, so, I mean, but 63, okay. Where's games played at? Okay, so yeah, relatively since, you know, the beginning of him being a real MVP level player, it's slowly gone down from 75 to now 73.
I mean, he played 63 in his second MVP.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, now you wouldn't win an MVP off playing 63 games. You have to play 65. So I think that's automatically a thing. You know, the most games the dude's ever played in his career,
80.
In terms of a being a top 10, 5 player, is 75. So I just don't think that with the way that he's been more injury prone as his career's gone on, you know, he didn't play in the playoffs against Miami last two years ago. And
yeah.
Then he didn't play against
the Pacers
this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that'll be a continuous trend because he's a player that relies on his athletic ability. You see a player like John Wall, Russell Westbrook, Derrick Rose, all relied on their athleticism. None of them aged too well into their late 30s. Westbrook is the only one that's playing at a semi-decent level at this point. And yeah, his jump shot has gotten a little bit better, but he still is not somebody that I'm going to go on and say, hey, I want you to shoot a three or anything like that. But another point, I think that he's loyal to Milwaukee. I don't think he wants to leave. And even if he does leave, he has like a couple of teams where he's said some stuff about where he wants to go. He said everybody wants to go play for Chicago. If he goes to Chicago and Cooper Flagg is not there, they're not going to win anything.
That would be crazy if they play together.
That's
just
him by himself with Matas Buzelis and, you know, a couple other guys. But that's no better of a situation than what he is in right now or than what he was in 2 years ago. So I don't think that he's in a position to where he can win a title for the rest of his career. And I think that the MVP is long past him because we have guys like Tatum, Ant, Shea, Wembanyama, four guys that are all going to be in the MVP race for the next 5 years. Who are two of those guys are going to get an MVP at some point in the next 5 years. So,
all right. So y'all are both done.
I'm done.
All right. This is a good one. That was probably the most even one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think either of y'all really won, to be honest with you, but because I agree with a lot of both of what y'all said. Y'all both made really good arguments, actually, because I have a hard time calling Giannis an injury-prone player. I guess he is, but But some of his injuries just kind of feel like bad luck.
Yeah.
A lot of the times, like
it just happened at
like
the end of the season.
He like strained his calf just walking up the court against the Celtics right before the playoffs, and that's just kind of like, I'm not gonna bank on that happening every year. I'm not gonna go into the playoffs expecting Giannis to be banged up, even though it has, like you said, happened the last 2 years. I just chalk that up to a little bit more bad luck. I think Giannis obviously takes very good care of his body. I mean, you saw the transformation that he had and putting on like a healthy muscle mass and healthy weight. And he's just an absolute beast. He's one of the most dominant players of all time. And then Jamie brought up a really great point about him improving. I think he quietly like gets better every year. Like Giannis is still getting better as a player. Like last year, you could argue is the best Giannis that we've seen when he's playing. Mm-hmm. He really is like an all-time great. He's really truly a top 25 player of all time.
25?
Yeah, I think so. And then
I like that.
On top of that, I think he's a top 3 player today.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And,
for sure.
And really close to being top two. Yeah. Probably maybe even is number 2. So with that being said, I'm confident enough that he'll win an MVP for sure. I think he for sure wins another MVP. Mm-hmm. But finals is going to be a stretch, especially because I don't know if he can do it in Milwaukee, and you brought up a good point about his loyalty. I really do think he loves Milwaukee. So I would even go as far as to say I don't think he'll win a finals unless it's with another team. But y'all both made excellent arguments.
Okay, for me, why will Victor Wembanyama not win a title in the next 8 years?
Ooh.
So it's strong timeline, but I'll say five years. 5 years.
Okay.
So, okay. Jamie, I want you to destroy it, and I want Caden to defend it. Wait, no. Other way around. I want you to say why he will not win. I want you to say why he will win.
Dang it.
All right, yeah. I'll just go straight off the bat.
Darn.
Because the way that he will win is by living up to that hype, like living up to that all-time great hype. So within the next 8 years, I believe that Victor Wembanyama will become – like solidify himself as the best player in the NBA at some point within that timeline, and ultimately is one of the better players to ever play the game. That being said, that's what it'll take, I think, and I'm confident that he's able to do that. I mean, you saw what he had last year. He's probably the best rookie that I've ever watched. I was like a newborn whenever LeBron was playing in his rookie year, so I didn't really get to see that. But he's up and away the best rookie that I've ever watched in the NBA.
I think he had the greatest rookie season ever.
I think that's a good starting argument.
Statistically, between him and Paolo.
Yeah.
And
which is awesome.
It helps that he plays for the Spurs and not the Wizards or the Hornets. Like, this is a franchise that knows how to get
players
to the championship. Yeah. They know how to develop players. They know how to build a team around a really good power forward. We've seen them do that a few times with David Robinson and Tim Duncan.
Yeah, so this is tough. Victor Wembanyama, we all know what he brings to the table. I think no matter how you look at it, whether you agree or disagree with his take, he's going to go down as one of the all-time greats. But I think in time it comes down to what the Spurs do for him, because I don't know how much time Greg Popovich has left as a coach in the NBA. Who fills those massive shoes of, you know, one of, if not the greatest head coach in the history of basketball leaving the Spurs? Who fills those shoes? They're definitely not winning this year because Chris Paul is, you know, he's not going to be the Pippen to Wembanyama's Jordan. I will say that, especially when he's, what, 38? Pushing 40, I'll just say that. They draft Stephon Castle this year. Stephon Castle, I agree he's amazing, but he's not that number two option that I think they need right now. He is not a amazing scorer that makes you just, like, pop your eyes out. Like, whoa, he was great in college as a scorer. He's more of a Jrue Holiday, and I feel like if they want to win a title as soon as Wembanyama wants to, you're going to need a little more than a Stephon Castle to develop and become a great, great scorer. They're going to have to make some sort of massive free agency jump, a massive trade, because I don't think they're going to land Cooper Flagg. They're going to be too good for that unless they strike gold in the lottery. That's not going to happen. So they're either going to need to hit big in the draft or make a splash in free agency or a trade, or else I don't think it will happen. Because you can already tick a year off with this one, and I think you can tick next year off unless they go out and get LeBron or whatever. Because Wemby's going to be good, but you need more than one great player on a team, and once Greg Popovich is gone, I don't know if 5 years is realistic.
All right, so if my counterpoint to that is that it could almost help them in a way because of how I think they'll be bad this year. I think they may even, like, intentionally tank a little bit this year. Like, I don't think they'll be as bad as they were last year. But I could see them putting themselves in a position where they get a decently high lottery pick, say maybe like 7 or 6 again this year. That will help. And then Wemby's career, Wemby will develop as a player, and San Antonio's is not a bad spot for free agents at all, especially with Victor Wembanyama. Aging superstars are going to want to play with Wemby, in my opinion. I mean, I don't see why you wouldn't want to, especially if he continues to develop as fast as he is now. I think 1 or 2 more years of them being pretty mediocre will actually help them in a way, help develop Stephon Castle, because I think Stephon Castle could be a Drew Holiday level player if they are to make championship runs. On top of that, they already have solid scoring depth pieces like Devin Vassell and Keldon Johnson. I think they're, with what they're paying Devin Vassell, they're pretty confident that he'll be a maybe weak third, really strong fourth option moving forward for them, or he'll break out in one of these next 2 mediocre years and become a very valuable trade asset. So I just think the Spurs draft so well, and then having Victor Wembanyama just creates so much wiggle room for you to do whatever you want. Because who knows, Wembanyama could even get to the point where he's good enough to take a mediocre team to a championship.
Yeah. All right, y'all done?
Mm-hmm.
Oof. Okay, I'll say that's a tie, too. I don't know if I think he's going to win a title in the next 5 years. Because it's just, the NBA is really top-heavy right now. And I think Boston's got a good hold on the league for the next 3 or 4 years. And then, you know, you also got the Thunder and the Timberwolves in the West that they've got to get through. So.
Okay, I think it's time to rip the Band-Aid off. The Oklahoma City Thunder will win the NBA Finals. I want
Nick to defend it.
This is the thing we said no matter what. I want Nick to defend it, and I want Caden to destroy it. The Oklahoma City Thunder will win the NBA Finals.
I can't defend something that I just disagree with so blatantly, though. That's like a little... If that's the case, I had something that I could have gave you that was really good. So, you know.
This is kind of like backstabbing.
Well, because that's just like too...
This is messed up.
That's just like, I can't agree with... I can't even... That's just lying. I can't...
Fine. I'll switch it up. The New York Knicks have everything go right and finish as the best team in the Eastern Conference. Caden, I want you to defend that, and I want Nick to destroy it.
Go ahead.
Team chemistry. Team chemistry goes a long way in the NBA, and I think that's what they brought in with Mikal Bridges now already adding on to the Villanova culture that they already have. On top of that, they have a perfect coach for the guys that they have. Tom Thibodeau coaches very hard, and some players don't like that, but the New York Knicks do. They do like that. So that with Mikal and Jalen Brunson and DiVincenzo, Josh Hart, like a lot of guys that play hard and are willing to play 45 minutes a game come playoff time, I just think that they're in the perfect situation to build success up in the future, and especially this year. You know, they've already made it clear that they're going all in this season. They traded like everything they have in their future for Mikal Bridges. So I just think that if there is a year for the Knicks, it's going to be within the next 2. So it might as well be this year. They brought back OG Anunoby as well. They have a really good bench. Julius Randle's still back, but you know, he seems a little unhappy. Could be traded, which, you know, could even be more beneficial for them.
Okay, yeah. So for me, I think the most glaring thing for why I do not think that they're going to be one of the top 2 to 3 teams in the Eastern Conference is because they don't have any backup big men. Precious Achiuwa is 6'8". So, you know, that automatically puts you at a disadvantage in terms of that. If you want to try and play small ball and run Mitchell Robinson, you know, some backup minutes and run Julius Randle at center, that's not going to work because Julius Randle is not a great post defender. And so I think, along with that, they lost a lot of depth. They still have good depth, you know, but, like, Miles McBride, I guess Josh Hart, DiVincenzo, and Precious will probably be the bench. And that's really good. But I think whenever you look at the core besides those 9, you need to have at least 2 more guys that can come in and be okay, and they don't have that. And I think that along with what you said about Tibbs being a hard coach, that has already been non-beneficial for them, because I think they could have made 2 conference finals runs in the last 2 years had they not played their players so hard. I think that the year that the Celtics lost to Miami in the conference finals, I think the Knicks could have been there. I think that the year, I think last year, they absolutely, had they been healthy, would have beat the Pacers in maybe five games. And, you know, I think that they're not going to be healthy because he plays them so hard. And then you bring up the point of Julius Randle. You know, going into a season having controversy automatically means that, you know, there's going to be some sort of tension in the locker room, especially between him and Tibbs probably. So
I think they either straighten that out, though. I'm confident that they either straighten that out or get him traded by the deadline.
Which will be more beneficial, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. But going into the playoffs, I don't think having depth will be as big of a factor as you think it is for them in the playoffs, because I think they really want to play those minutes. Some of them do. Josh Hart has made it clear, and that's what Tom Thibodeau has to do a better job of.
Yeah.
Be more selective with who he plays that with. I think Josh Hart can handle 40, 42, 43, 44 minutes a game. I think Jalen Brunson can handle that load too, though, because he plays differently than most superstars. You know, he's not your typical superstar. He plays a lot grittier, a lot more slow-paced, half-court offense. And I think that can contribute to helping them play longer, because they're not running out in transition. Like, there's ways for you to get your rest in some of these half-court sets if you just slow the game down and play at your own pace. You know, Josh Hart's playing 45 minutes a game. Tell him, okay, for the next 2 minutes on offense, you're going to just sit in the corner and kind of catch a little bit of a breather. Cavs used to do that with LeBron all the time. Instead of subbing him out, hey, let me put you away from the play a little bit, but to the point where you can still make a play if necessary. But I do think that the Knicks have good young guys too, like Deuce McBride. And then, you know, I mean, some of their guys aren't necessarily young anymore, like McCall and Jalen Brunson, but they're high-energy guys, and they're in their prime right now, like OG Anunoby as well. Mitchell Robinson.
Amen, brothers. Yeah, I think you guys both killed that. I think it was a tie because I said, will they finish at the top seed in the East? Caden brought up amazing points that say they will. And Nick brought up amazing points that say they don't even finish in the top three. So I got to commend both of y'all. I think it's a tie. That was really good. So, Caden, I think you're the
last one, one.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I have a few left, but I'm going to just go with, like, maybe the most interesting one that I have still. All right. Zion has a huge year. First or second team All-NBA. Leads the Pels to over 50 wins. And a Western Conference Finals appearance. Like Nick, that. You're going to defend this. And Jamie, you're going to destroy it.
Here we go. All right. So, for me, the biggest, the most glaring thing as to why that he will be such a good player is because he actually has a real point guard. You look at probably his... This season was probably his best season, just in terms of dominating and being available. It was probably whenever Lonzo Ball was the point guard, and he actually had a real playmaker. CJ McCollum is not a playmaker. I've been really wanting them to get a real, legit point guard ever since they got CJ. And I think that that's only going to elevate his play, and it's going to make, you know, if you're running, you can legit run a small ball five with that, because Zion is so elite defensively that he's going to be able to run big, and, you know, you can run one of the most elite defensive teams in the NBA with DeJounte, CJ, Herb Jones, Brandon Ingram, Zion. I mean, that's – nothing is going in the post. And, you know, if you get anything in the post, Zion and Herb are going to, you know, shut that down. And Zion, coming off of at the end of last season, got hurt, and he was playing so good in the play-in game, I think he had 50. He's going to go ahead and bring that kind of energy into the – into this next season, and he's going to play better off of that, and he's going to, I think, be the second best power forward in the NBA, if not maybe potentially first. And I think that he's you look at what he's done this offseason, he looks like about 25 pounds lighter. He looks more fit, and I think that with this upgraded point guard that he's going to be a whole lot better this season.
Looking at his basketball reference, and apparently his middle name is Latif. Zion Latif Williamson. Okay, so here's my argument. Zion Williamson, the talent is undeniable. We know how great he is, whether it's in the paint, blocking shots, as an undersized power forward, really, he does it all. But in the game of basketball, health is wealth. He didn't play the entire 2021-22 season with an injured foot. He wins Rookie of the Year only playing 24 games. The season after his broken foot, he only played 29. Last year, he finally plays 70 games, the most of his career, but he wasn't an all-star. After playing all 70 of those games, he averaged 23 a game, but it wasn't enough. And yes, I know they add DeJounte Murray, but you're saying they're going to make the Western Conference Finals. This Western Conference is top to bottom legit loaded. The Oklahoma City Thunder are young and only getting better. Denver has debatably the best player in basketball. Dallas has debatably the best player in basketball. Minnesota has the best up-and-comer that we've seen in a very long time in Anthony Edwards, alongside a former Defensive Player of the Year, alongside the Big Purr, Naz Reid, Sixth Man of the Year. Phoenix Suns, you asked me to make an argument about them earlier. Who's to say with the addition of Tyus Jones they aren't just amazing with Kevin Durant and Booker? And all these other teams, defense. Memphis being as amazing as they are and coming back healthy, I think it's going to be extremely difficult for the Pelicans to make the Western Conference Finals with that injury plague that has been kind of plaguing them for a very long time, and it really hurt them all of last season. So Zion, I know he's amazing. He's a great, great player. But even when he was fully healthy last year, for the most part, playing 70 games, he wasn't an all-star. So he's great. DeJounte is great. But I don't know if he can get that far.
The reason that he wasn't an all-star, though, was because he didn't have a playmaker. And, you know, he also had Brandon Ingram, who was in and out of the lineup and just was taking shots away from him. And then he had a very rotational roster, and as well as, once again, not having a center. He had Cody Zeller and Larry Nance. And then now I think that he's going to probably take over as the center. Or Yves Messi, or whatever that rookie's name is, who I think is going to be really good for them. And I think that Zion's going to take another step defensively, and I think he's going to be a top five finisher in D-boy.
Yeah, I think he's great, but I think those injuries, who's to say they don't plague him going into the next season as well, and he doesn't get hit with more? Because it sucks to see how injury-prone he is, because he's an amazing basketball player, but, you know, with him, anything's possible.
And his three-point shooting has gotten a lot better.
Yeah. I think y'all both brought up really great points. You know, I think Zion could potentially take that next step into being a superstar this year. You know, he's got the driving down. He's defensively great. He's proven, you know, in the play-in last year that he can perform in those big-time games. He had like 42 on the Lakers. He could develop a little bit better as a playmaker out of the post. You know, they have good shooters like Trey Murphy, C.J. McCollum, Daquan Cook, Herb Jones. So I do think they have a promising year ahead of them if they can stay healthy.
Yeah, I agree.
That's all we got. Just real quick, I want to read the last ones that I didn't get to say, my takes. The ones I didn't say were the Charlotte Hornets play better than expected and finish a top 8 seed in the East.
I thought about doing that one. Mm-hmm. I really thought about doing that.
That was my other like solidified one I was going to ask. And then my two extras were kind of out of just crazy. The DeMar DeRozan experiment fails in Sacramento and they miss the play-in. And then, with an increased role on the team, Brandon Podziemski makes the All-Star team in the West.
Gosh. Oh, gosh. Okay, man.
So, glad we didn't get that. Right. We didn't get that far, but that would have been crazy. But I think, barring anything else, that is all we have for you guys this week. Thank you for tuning in to WVUA 90.7 FM and the Full Court Press Podcast. To stay up to date, follow us on Instagram at FTPPodcast_UA. We'll see y'all next week.
Peace.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.